my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what have we got to review this week?
Well, Dave, I've picked a movie which I've been absolutely trying to think how I actually came across this. You've got to be on that year VHS freebie that we had in the family, because I don't understand how it was even released in the UK, reading up on it afterward, watched it again this week. But we're going back to 1993, Dave. Nicolas Cage, Dennis Hopper, Lara Flynn Boyle, and JT Walsh. And this one is, Dave, Red Rock West. So, had you ever heard or seen this one, Dave?
No, never saw it at the time, never even saw a trailer. And I think quite often, I kind of miss the trailers, Chris. You know, I mean, yeah. I guess Amazon started throwing more and more, adverts, haven't they? Unless you want to pay a premium now. So you do get occasional adverts, but usually they're pushing some kind of series or something. But it kind of makes me think back to how great it was to just experience those trailers and then think, oh, right, well, that's obviously going to be coming out in the next month or so. So, you know, I'll be on the lookout for that one. And first kind of seeing Nicolas Cage in anything, I think it was Raising Arizona that I seem to remember. And that seemed to be on, you know, a few different things that I watched. But I remember him. And I remember him being in the trailer and thinking, oh, you know, it's quite an interesting performance. I wouldn't have thought in those terms, but there was just something about him that stood out. But it didn't seem like the sort of movie I was going to be into. You know, it didn't have any kind of action or martial arts or anything. So it wasn't something I was going to seek out and be into. And so to this day, I still haven't watched Raising Arizona. I think that's a gap. You know, that's one of those, like you said with Beetlejuice, you know, it's on my list of things that I need to tick off at some point. But yeah, for this one, had no idea about this one at all. And it's another one, isn't it, that it is going to be hard for me to not draw parallels with Blood Simple. I think just being that kind of neo-noir Western, you know, and you've got this intricate plot with and these double crosses with this small cast, it feels very much like that Coen Brothers first movie that we watched. So, yeah, but other than that, no real kind of recollections of the actual movie. And really glad you picked this one. This is a proper, you know, how the fuck have I not come across this one before? But how about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, you know what, Dave? It's a great point you just made about the trailers. Maybe I saw the trailers. We don't give them enough credit. I know, like, years ago, I think my granddad used to be one where he wanted to watch the fucking trailers, you know, to see what was on. And you normally...
Doesn't sound like you're as much of a fan of trailers as I am.
No. But normally when, you know what I'm like, Mr. Fucking Impatient. So normally it's like, if you're watching a film, it's a martial arts film, you do want to sort of get to the movie, if that makes sense. And obviously if you're renting the same sort of movies, the same trailers are on, aren't they, pretty much all the time? Or you would watch a trailer you're interested in, if it's there, fast forward it, and you know, and you forget that, like you say, with such a privileged world we live in now, like, they were staples, weren't they, of, right, we need to get, and if you went too far, you missed the start of the movie, you've got to get it exactly perfect and all that thing. So maybe it was that, maybe it was the trailer that I'd seen and sort of interested me. But yeah, I had this. I think I had it on X rental VHS as well at one point. Again, another one. Why the hell did I get rid of all my VHSs? Like, I fucking told the story. I sold them for a Spider-Man game. Absolute bellend, Dave, at Blockbuster. I fucking right. They did. I must have sold about, there must be hundreds of fucking VHSs. I kept all my collectible ones and they've gone now. Stupid. But anyway, but yeah, so I really enjoyed this. And it was one of the movies I wasn't you know, where Nicolas Cage was at this point, to be honest, other than then later on when he ended up in Con Air and stuff like that, and obviously Face Off as well. I think Face Off came first, then Con Air, so I was aware of him. But I think from this point, it put him on my radar as someone who I enjoyed, you know, watching and everything. So, yeah, I mean, he came out 93. I reckon realistic, I was about 16 when I watched it. He's probably 95, because I think he probably would have been a 15 in the UK, so I could rent it. So, yeah, it's maybe 95, actually. So it wouldn't have been the blockbuster at the year free rentals. I think that was a little bit earlier. So it would have been maybe a blockbuster, or there was one in called Global in Cholton, you know, Cholton in Manchester, Dave.
Oh, Global, very well. Chris. When we were Global, at Blockbusters, we hated Global. They were on Nemesis.
Yeah, they were around the corner. Blockbusters was huge. Blockbusters now, actually, in Cholton is M&S, like small M&S, but Global was on the front as well. We were within about half a mile of each other. So if you went to Global, they had quite a lot, but they never liked Blockbusters. Blockbusters was like a massive supermarket. It's like going into an Asda when you've been in a fucking little corner shop or something. You know what I mean? You go in and it had like so many copies. The amount of fucking episodes of Friends I fucking bootlegged, Dave, when a two videos set up and everything was fucking marvelous.
Scotch tape.
Honestly, some of them come out great and some wouldn't. I think even once I actually took back, they rang me. They rang me and said, "Can you bring your copy of Friends back?" And I was like, "Why? Because you've given us the fucking one that you copied it off."
Rumbles.
With the tape. Can I have my tape back? They even give me the tape back. I used to send Sam in then for a bit, going, "Can you just go in and get that? I'll wait in the car." They probably fucking, because it was in there all the time. But yeah, so anyway. I can't pinpoint how I came across this movie, but I remember I've watched this a few times. I've not watched this for about, God, it must be 20 odd years, but yeah, thoroughly enjoying it. And it was always one of them little hidden gems. I've got an Alec Baldwin one in my back pocket that's on my list, Dave. You know, usually, because we've gone through all our classics pretty much, haven't we, over the years. So sort of like when I'm looking at different movies, I'm like, what can I do? I can't just keep picking over an Avedon all the time, which I haven't done for a while, probably about a year. So I have got a list there of every time I see a movie and I go, oh, I really enjoyed it. I've got it. And this has been pretty much one and two top of my list to do, because I did think you'd not seen it. And having done Blood Simple and some of the other movies that are quite similar in genre, I've enjoyed going back watching them. So, yeah, so I'm glad that you'd never seen it. And I'm also interested what you think of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got tons of classics to still go through, but we'll see. What I would say, Chris, so it's funny, you know these latent memories that you just long forgotten and it's just come back to the forefront. But talking about Global, I mean, I fucking forgot about Global a long time ago. But sometimes someone would drop off a video and it was from Global, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember once the manager was like, open the box, and it was a Global box and stuff, and he's like, "Ah, it's all right, we'll have that." I just nabbed the video, stick a Blockbuster's case around it, and fucking away you go. So it's like, you dodgy fucker. But also, speaking of Nemesis, Chris, you know, the nemesis of the VHS, the DVD, I was talking about my love of trailers, but you're right. I mean, if you bought one, so not one that you've rented from the shop, but one that you bought, then you know, you only have to watch the trailers once, don't you, and then you fast forward past them. But I remember those early DVDs, they were the ones that forced the trailers on you. I can't remember. I think it might have been The Matrix was one of my first DVDs that I ever bought, and I remember that it just played the trailers and you couldn't fucking fast forward past it.
Yeah,
so it forced you, every time you wanted to watch the movie, you had to watch all the fucking trailers again. So, you know, I do love trailers, but I just remembered then, I was like, oh yeah, those early DVDs, like you couldn't skip past them. And then, so I flipped the other way then. I'm like, I fucking hate these trailers, you know, because I've seen it, I get it. You know, I either want to watch the movie or not. So, yeah. Funny things that you just forget, and then through us talking, you just sort of brings it back to the fore.
It does, and I think when we did Mike Bassett, because I've still got some old DVDs that must be 20 odd years old, and the Mike Bassett one's got that fucking, you know, that that advert for piracy, the fucking market stall one where the kids there, it's like, you know, for piracy, blah, blah, and it comes on and it looks so fucking dated and shit. Fuck me, Dave. We're all going down for a five stretch these days, the way people watch content. I'll say no more on that. But yeah, fucking everybody in the UK will be getting fucking cuffed up if that's the case. We're watching stuff. But yeah, it's brilliant. And it's a timestamp in it in our lives where you look at it. And I love the fact that we can do this and pick these movies out. I might pick the Alec Baldwin one next time, Dave. I'm sort of revealing my hand. But it's another one that I had on X Rental and I loved it. And I don't know why I loved it because it gets great reviews, but it's a really, really early movie he did. So yeah, I may keep that one in the back pocket, I think.
Interesting. I am very, very intrigued. So the going down for a five stretch. Did you see that the La Liga president, right? So the Spanish league president, he said, if you go on Google and type, I want to buy cocaine or child sex, nothing appears. But if you type free football, it does. And I'm like, those are your two examples of what you
fucking Google?
Jesus Christ.
That is awful. Fuck, someone needs to get his fucking hard drive. I've not even seen that. That is terrible.
So the only reason I'd said it is it was actually the Out of Office podcast that I follow on Twitter.
Yeah,
of course. They've put the fucking David Brent and Gareth when he's typing. You know, he's like, if I just type in sex, look at how many things come back, and it's like, Dutch women with big boobs need to be punished.
But they do, Dave. Like, they do.
Fair play.
How many people do you think, when they watched The Office, went on to fucking research that one, Dave? No comment.
Yeah, but what a fucking bonkers thing to say by someone in power. Like, so he's obviously not terrible. A fan of the old fire stick, I don't think.
I've never said a fire stick, Dave, so yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm what they call, Dave, with a fire stick. I'm the Gandalf of the fire stick. That's all I'll say. Amazing work. I'm like a magician. There you go. But anyway, let's get into the trailer, Dave, because we may not be here next week after that revelation, but there you go.
Let's go.
What kind of work are you looking for?
I was hoping to get on a drilling crew.
Why don't you try Red Rock? Maybe somebody there can head you in the right direction.
I thought you were supposed to be here last Friday. You are here for the job, aren't you? And you're Lyle from Dallas, right?
Right.
There's the five, like we agreed. Just to go out to the house, break in. When she comes in, you know what to do.
Your name's Suzanne? I don't know how to tell you this, but your husband, Wayne, he plans to have you murdered.
You know, I never did catch your name.
I'm Michael.
Lyle from Dallas.
Super fast.
What should I do?
If I were you, I'd get a divorce.
Maybe just a state of mind.
Not in Texas.
Find her.
It's all about money.
If you like it, it'll make me shoot you.
Nicolas Cage of Honeymoon in Vegas and Moonstruck, Lara Flynn Boyle of The Temp and Wayne's World, and Dennis Hopper of Boiling Point and Blue Velvet.
Does this mean that we ain't partners?
Red Rock West. From Columbia TriStar Home Video.
Michael Williams is a drifter living out of his car after being discharged from the Marine Corps. A job on an oil field falls through due to his unwillingness to conceal a war injury on his job application. So Michael wanders into rural Red Rock. A local bar owner named Wayne mistakes him for a hitman, Lyle from Dallas, whom Wayne has hired to kill his wife. Wayne offers him a stack of cash. half now, half later. And Michael plays along by taking the money. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, it's very, very 1990s the way it's filmed. You know, like the camera. Mm. There's something about some of these early 1990 movies that we've covered that there's something with the cameras. You can just tell the era that it was made. And one thing, Dave, at this point, so I would have watched this on 95. I was proper into going to the gym. I'd just left school and everything. And I wanted to do them one-handed push-ups. And I remember watching Nicolas Cage at the start of this movie with his fucking top off, cowboy boots, denim on, big fucking buckle belt, doing one-handed push-ups in the middle of the fucking road.
Sounds
like
a bit homoerotic, really.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying I wanted him fucking pushing down on me with the one hands, Dave, but you know what I mean? I always wanted to do them. I've never been able to do them. I'm pretty good at press-ups. I can't do one-handed ones, not with my dodgy shoulders, but I was always in awe of watching him do it. I was like, fucking hell, it's brilliant, that. But again, Dave, you know, like when you're watching a movie, it just gives you a little insight into his character, doesn't it? Because we don't know what's going to happen at this point, but you're sort of thinking, hang on a minute. He keeps himself fit. He's in good shape. He goes, obviously, onto the building site, and he's, you know, he won't disclose this fucking injury sort of thing. Hang on, he could be a bit of a fucking... He's a bit of an hard fucker on the quiet. You know, one of them, yeah. Like, you know, he's a drifter. So it's very clever the way they plant that little bit of a seed that, hang on, he can look after himself, this guy. So I do like that. And I like the fact that when he goes into Red Rock, questions have got to be asked straight away, Dave. It's almost Dukes of Hazzard levels of Boss Hogg, who owns everything in Dukes of Hazzard. Wayne is everywhere. But at this point, he's just the bar owner who wants him to kill his missus. So, yeah, I really like this move. I like the start of it as well. It sets a really good tone and the believable. The one thing isn't unbelievable is Nicolas Cage's eyebrows and his hairline, Dave. But, you know, fair play. It's still going strong after all this time. So I'll give him credit there. But brilliant start to the movie.
Yeah, the thing I don't ever quite understand with Nicolas Cage, because he has got that hairline from a young age where it's clinging on for dear life, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just, it's this wispy kind of texture to it, but it's like he's playing a role as if like he's this kind of heartthrob. And like you say, I don't know if I'd ever consider him like a fucking hard case. I don't know if he would be the obvious choice. So if I got this script or got this story and I was thinking, right, who can play that real underdog, you know, someone who's down on his luck but very strong in his morals, you know, and he's got to be sexy enough that the femme fatale character is going to want to, you know, meet up and run off with him and stuff. Nicolas Cage wouldn't be my first thought, but I have to say he's fucking brilliant in this. He's really, you know, this is before he gets a bit bonkers, isn't it? You know, this is toned down Nicolas Cage, and I think he is really, really good. And a little bit like we said with Jack Nicholas, where, you know, we watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it was like, all right, yeah, I get it now, you know, and it's going back to early Nicolas Cage, you're like, yeah, you can see this guy just does ooze kind of charisma. And yeah, I like the beginning. You know, I can't help but feel like, I don't know, like Brian Dennehy would be a great fucking
yes.
person Wayne. To cast in this. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. And it's a bastard.
Yeah, he would make a really good sheriff in this. And, you know, he'd also want to do Nick Cage for Vagrancy, probably, like in First Blood. But yeah, so it is slightly nonsense. And like I say, it's an incredibly small cast, isn't it? But I think, I mean, I don't know about you, Chris. I've never been to Texas. So the only thing I see about Texas is through media. So, you know, I don't know. Do you have these kind of little towns? I mean, Texas itself is fucking huge as a state, isn't it? But yeah. Do you have these little kind of towns where everyone kind of does, everyone knows everyone else and everyone else's business and stuff? So, yeah, it's almost like one of those comedy of errors type setups, isn't it? You know, where he ends up being mistaken for this hitman, you know, almost like a Monty Python sketch or something. But you can sort of see how it's going.
Yeah, sorry to go across you. You're right, Dave. It is, isn't it? Look, if you've got a job and you go in a bar and you're having a fucking pint or you're having a whiskey, or someone says, is that $5,000? Make it quick or whatever. You'd be like, all right, then I'll make it very quick. I'll get straight back in my car and fuck off out of here. But it's almost like the whole prospects of Red Rock West is the fact that Michael, you know, stroke Lyle at this point, he can't get away from the fucking place, can he? So when he meets Wayne, and like you say, Dave, it's brilliant because he just fucking, he's obviously anxious. He wants his fucking missus bumping off. We don't know who his missus is at this point. And I think the way Cage plays it, he's very good acting, and he's like looking at him and he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you in? Yeah, yeah. Right, it's five now. And then you're like, I bet you were thinking, fucking hell, what's going on? You'll never see me again. America's such a big place. You're never going to catch me. But there was believable events that couldn't drag him away from the place. It's not like he's got a force field around Red Rock West, is it? You know what I mean? He just wants, he wants a job. He wants a bit of a life. He wants to do something. But when obviously he takes the money and then it's like, right, well, let's see what's going on. And then he gets that guy and the guy gets, he runs the guy over. That's when it unravels. But even down to the point of like, he's in the hospital. And as soon as the deputy, to be honest, he's the baddie in Beverly Hills Cop 3. So I kept thinking, he's a baddie in this. He's a bastard. And he's not, because he's floppy hair and everything. He usually plays a baddie, that guy.
Hair, he plays a baddie.
Yeah, he usually does. He's usually a bit of a weasel sort of guy, you know, sort of actor. So at the time when I watched
I want to defend myself here, having floppy hair in the 90s, but I know you also had floppy hair. So being floppy hair doesn't mean you're a baddie.
But in movies, it does. But yeah, Beverly Hills Cop 3, 94. I knew he was. He was Thelma and Louise, but Hunt for Red October. He's been in quite a few things. Been in a lot of TV stuff, actually, over the last few years. But I always associate him being that baddie in Beverly Hills Cop. So with, like, Wayne, you don't know what's going on. When the hospital, like, he brings the guy in, doesn't he? And he's like, he looks dead and like, oh, we've got a pulse. And then the deputy's talking to him and he's about to move his car because he's in this like parking zone thing and they think he's going to do a runner. And he's like, and then the guy comes with the hat. And I do like that with the hat because straight away you're like, who's this guy? And then he looks up and you're like, how the fuck are you the sheriff, the bar owner?
Yeah.
What's going on? There is a timeline.
Post office clerk.
Yeah, post office clerk. Fucking, yeah, he's the teacher at the local school. He's the fucking priest on a Sunday. Yeah, he's one of them. He does everything, Dave. He's earning about $500,000 a year with all these salaries he's giving himself. He's the mayor. He's everything. But what's really interesting is, and I do want to question the timeline of all this. There's a big hole for me in the plot, which doesn't matter because I think the tension's there, isn't there? The suspense of what's going to go on. And when Wayne takes Michael and says, right, impound his car, come with me. And they have this little thing and he's like, you know, he says the money's in the car and all that. And then it just kicks off. And honestly, it's, I'm probably doing it a disservice because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of like acting and looks and different things going on. But I think it's just a great setup for this movie, Dave. It's such a compact movie at 98 minutes, but it's just, I really, really enjoyed this movie again.
Yeah, it's this series of unfortunate events, isn't it? Like you say, it runs the guy over. I mean, as far as the deputy's concerned, you know, he's banged to rights, isn't he? Because the guy's been shot. But you have to think, well, why would you shoot someone and then bring them into the hospital and then wait there? You know, yeah. I'm not saying that I've planned this out myself, but surely, you know, if you have a bout of conscience, you just dump him outside the hospital. I've seen these movies, you know, dump him outside the hospital, stick your foot on the accelerator, away you go. So, you know, I'm sure he would have got away with it, you know, or not got away with it, but, you know, the deputy's going to be like, oh, it's a bit weird. But obviously he knows, doesn't he, that Nicolas Cage, that like, oh shit, I am into some dodgy stuff here. I should call him Michael, shouldn't I? That's his character's name. So Michael's into some dodgy shit, so like his arse is probably twitching like a rabbit's nose at this point, like, oh fuck, you know, like you say, the fucking sheriff comes in and the sheriff's arse is probably going as well. It's like, oh shit, you know, this was supposed to be a quite a simple job. What the fuck's going on? So yeah, I like that. And I haven't thought too deeply about the plot, to be honest, you know, and does it all really join up? But yeah, I just think it was just intriguing. And again, it's probably unfair, but just because we watched Blood Simple for the first time fairly recently, it felt like that, where like everything was well thought out, you know, and how it all joined up together and linked together and whatever. So I think it was really well put. And like you say, when the sheriff's trying to get rid of him, and, you know, obviously he has a bit of a thing what's her name? Lara
Flynn Boyle. Yeah.
Yeah. So Anne McCord / Susan Brown, not Susan Boyle. A very different character there. So I recognize her. You know, it's silly, right? As soon as she came on screen, I'm like, I've seen her in something else. I don't know what it is. So you go on IMDb and whatever. It's Wayne's World that I recognize her from. It's Wayne's ex-girlfriend, you know, and I mean, it was one of those, I guess that was the joke, that she was stunning, but she was a bit bonkers, and like Wayne's just trying to get rid of her. Like, but honestly, Chris, I thought she was fucking brilliant in this.
She's excellent.
She was really good. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, why would you be in something like Wayne's World? It didn't make sense to me. But yeah, in terms of playing that femme fatale role in your kind of noir movies, I thought she played a great role.
I do, and I'm with you. She's dead sexy, isn't she? You, at first, you just think it's the sort of spurned husband, don't you? He just wants her being bumped off. And you know what, Dave, as well, just slightly segueing, the trivia to this movie is unbelievable. So it got bombed, basically, at the cinema. First time round, it was a complete failure. It got initially, the reviews were pretty bad at the screenings. However, it then got a second run, and it was one of the most successful indie films of the 90s. And it was being shown in cinemas that were packed and selling out, even though it was on TV. Or if people couldn't get it that way, they ended up going to like the video shops and renting it. It became this phenomenon. And I don't know if that's why there was an article maybe in the paper or something. I still can't remember how I came across this movie, but I remember wanting to watch it. And I think it's got like massive cult following after this. I mean, the reviews are fantastic on it as well. Like, it's such positive reviews. I think it's like 7.5 on IMDb or something like that. It's really positive, you know, like reviews. So yeah, it's really, really 98%, it says, on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like, it's unbelievable. So
it's weird, go on.
No, sorry, I was just gonna say, I said it last week, but I think it's one of Nicolas Cage's most highly reviewed movies, to be honest, which is not a lot of people know about it, as Michael Caine would say.
Not a lot of people know that.
Something like that.
But I tell you, it kind of plays a great role as well. And there is something, it's not exactly Tarantino, but there is something a little bit kind of Tarantino, probably more Robert Rodriguez, to be fair, with the whole Texas thing. But Dennis Hopper's character seems like a Tarantino character to me. You know, because he is a bit of a badass, isn't he? He's the actual hitman. And again, in terms of playing good roles, I think he kind of steals it, you know, and straight from the off, you know, when you've got him coming, Nicolas Cage or Michael is running away and he ends up nearly getting run over. And he's like, oh, you know, it's a good job I've just changed my brakes, or else, you know, I'd be picking your brains up off the floor. And you know, again, it's this unfortunate event, isn't he? Like you say, there's not a force field around Red Rock West, but he keeps, like Michael Corleone, he keeps getting pulled back in. And so, yeah, again, I just thought his kind of hitman character was quite good. And I believe that they were originally looking at him to play the sheriff.
Yeah.
But he really wanted to play the hitman. And again, I think he just hits it out of the park, to be honest, in the way he plays it.
I agree. He's dead brash in his text. He's got the car, the big like Cadillac. He's got the cowboy gear on Annie, you know. And when what I like, Dave, though, because obviously just before this, Susan's said to Michael, but he goes to warn and says, you're going to be killed. There's a guy called Lyle coming. He thought it was me. She then offers him more money to kill Wayne. And obviously this is how the accident happens. He's like, I need to get the fuck out of here. But then when they're in the bar and obviously Michael's drinking with Lyle, he then twigs who he is, doesn't he? You know, and he's like, oh, shit. He goes in the toilet, smashes the window, he's like, what am I going to do? And then this is where Lyle then speaks to Wayne and he's like, I'm Lyle from fucking Dallas.
Yeah.
And he already knows that Michael isn't finger. And he gets on the roof. Now, that's something completely different, isn't it? They go outside looking for him to try and get Michael. And I didn't know this, but the truck driver apparently is some dead famous country and western singer. So when he does like the whole trapeze thing and he's on top of the truck in it, and you think he's getting away and you think, oh, he's getting out, and the guy pulls the gun. Well, that country and western singer, Dwight Wackham or Yoakam or something, he's actually his own gun. He bought a gun for the movie just to have for that scene. He's a songwriter, he's an actor as well, but he's mainly for his country and western stuff. Because I kept thinking, he looks a bit familiar, this guy. He does look, and you're right about the Tarantino thing. It does look a bit like he's be someone who'd be like a reoccurring character in a Tarantino movie. Very odd, that scene, isn't it? And he's like, I don't believe that. He goes, you think I'm fucking the bullshit you're saying here? You know, because I like the fact you stumble on something. Like, he calls him out, which is very unusual for movies. But even the deputies, you know, usually in these movies, I mean, we've just been covering with Jack, Fast and Furious, haven't we? We've been laughing about it before that recording. But basically, the one we've just done, The Fate and the Furious, and it's a great thing, is Dominic Toretto takes out his own team because he's going double agent because he's been blackmailed, because they're fucking useless. And then at the end, he then saves them because they're also useless. He's like the one thing. So what we're getting at is most movies like this, the police, other than the main character, if the main character is like a detective or some sheriff who nobody messes with, his backups are shit. You know they're going to get killed. You know that they're absolutely useless. They couldn't John McClane. Yeah, they couldn't fucking get any sort of crime. Could they? Absolutely terrible. But in this, I like the fact that the deputies, when they said about like Michael and the hospital, and when Wayne's saying, well, he's obviously done it, and they're like, and he says to him, that deputy that done it, is the baddie all the time. He says, Deputy Matt, he's called Greytack, Dave, Deputy Matt Greytack. He says, well, why would he bring him in if he's been shot? If he shot him twice, why would he then run him over and bring him to the hospital? And they're questioning Wayne, and these little things there which you don't normally see in movies, because usually they're just there for fodder, aren't they? You get them in a horror movie, you know the cops are getting fucking killed. Terminator 2, none of them cops were fucking doing anything with it. They were absolutely useless. When I know he was a robot, but nobody, they were just shit. Most movies, the cops are portrayed, unless it's centered on a cop like, say, Training Day or Lethal Weapon or Beverly Hills Cop, they're useless, aren't they? They're just fodder for like the main plot, you know, like Commando with Arnie. They're always the same. It's the same old scripts. But I just like the fact that they've got a little bit. It actually shows that actually they might be pretty good at the job in this. You know what I mean? I know it sounds silly, but I believe that side of it. It wasn't just a case of standing there going, okay, Sheriff, we'll go and do this. We're as corrupt as you. Or like Rambo, where they're all just bastards, aren't they? You know, that sort of thing. So
yeah.
I think that's what makes it stand out for me. The characters are very, very believable, but you hit on a great point. Susan, as we don't know at the time, she's the focal point of the whole story, isn't she? Which is great.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, the deputies, you're right. They play a part in this intricate plot, but the main cast is basically, it's you know, it's Michael, it's Lyle, you've got Anne slash Susan, and then you've got the sheriff. You know, those are the core cast, but you're right, the wider cast as well does play an interesting role in it as well. So yeah, really impressive.
It is, and just nipping back to sort of the deputies, they then realized that Wayne isn't Wayne. Now, I've got questions, Dave. I've got questions like, how the fuck have this Bonnie and Clyde, who are wanting for embezzlement, they've stole like 1.5 million, they've still got like 500,000 stashed away or whatever it is. Wayne gets arrested and he gets put in jail. There's no like double dealing, no fiddling, no nothing. Wayne gets put into the little cells. And that's what I'm saying about them characters are like, we've worked out is. What I don't understand is, how many fucking years? Because when they show the wanted pictures on the video looks exactly the same as they are now. But Wayne and, well, Anne and Kevin, as their real names, you know, Susan and Wayne, have been able to go to Red Rock West. He's got a job as, he owns a bar. He's got a job as a fucking sheriff. And nobody's questioned. There's been no fucking checks into his criminal past. They've not done anything. They've just given him the highest job in the fucking, this little town. And he's got it, and nobody's questioned it. But in this one day, you've got Michael, and it all comes out then what's going on, because the deputies have actually got something about them. It's brilliant because it's something completely different to what we're used to. However, you're also like, but the timeline doesn't skew up here at all. You know, Wayne looks like mid to late 40s, done he? Probably. He's probably, well, saying that, Dave, he's probably about 35, but, you know, like 35 then. He's
probably, Taggart.
Yeah, he's probably 29 or something, but she's probably older than him in real life, Laura Flynn Boyle. But that's when it comes out about her then properly. And the fact that, you know, she wants to go back to the safe to get the money, and they're there, aren't they? And then obviously Michael then he throws that thing at Lyle, chins him, knocks him out and everything. And then you've got the whole thing where they're trying to get away, but then they end up at like the graveyard. And it's one of them where Wayne's getting all this money out of the graveyard and Lyle's there. And I knew straight away when you watch it now, he lifts up the fucking thing and he's like, yeah, he's saying about the money. But, and it was like that, you know, that old bloke where it says, this isn't going to be fun. Yeah. You and that old bloke pulls whips the cord. I fucking love that scene. It's so good. This isn't going to go well for you or whatever he says. I love that fucking scene. And an old bloke of 80 pulls the fucking gun out. I love it. It's fucking brilliant. But he does that, doesn't he, really? He sort of just pulls the gun. But Michael had seen Lyle take the cartridge out of the gun as well. That was on the floor. So there's all different little things, little switcheroos. Lyle doesn't trust anybody, does he? And obviously, yeah. Fucking Wayne ends up fucking taking one for the team. He's at the, you know, he's at the right spot, sort of thing. And he gets the knife, doesn't he, into his neck. And I believe, a bit of trivia, when they filmed that scene, it was a rubber knife, but Dennis Hopper threw it and he wasn't expecting it and it fucking cracked him. So when he was fuming that way, that JT Walsh in the production. But it's a great scene, isn't it? Because you can't really have, you know, Wayne is there and just before that, Dennis Hopper, Lyle's killed the deputy and Wayne's got a bit of compassion. Like, no. And he kills him, fucking shoots him and he's chatting away. But this is where she comes into her own, where it's that whole, she's done the dough. She slept with him, hasn't she? She slept with like Nicolas Cage because it looks like he was getting a good scene to there, Dave. Let's just say, got a bit of hairy chest going on as she moved down his body. We'll say no more. But he did look like he was enjoying himself. But she's done the thing. She's honey tracked him. She's sort of saying to him, like, we've got to Mexico. Let's do this. We're together. They've only been fucking, like, it's about 12 hours. They've slept together. He saved a life. That's it. They're going to set up for life. Let's go.
To be fair, I did just watch Terminator last night. And
John Connor was created off the back of them fucking, that trampy outfit and the Nike things.
I can't unsee the fact that, you know, after they come out of the motel and stuff, he still puts the, he's right. When he nicks the tramp's trousers, right?
Oh, fucking minging, isn't it?
And legs it, but he's got no other clothes. So he goes to a store to equip himself with the rest of the clothes, but he doesn't think to replace the trousers. So he's still wearing the fucking
green piss-stained fucking trousers with skids on them and everything. Oh, he's minging in it. But he's got a lovely pair of Nike trainers. I love them trainers. Fucking brilliant. He's got Nike Air Jordans on, hasn't he? But he's dressed like he's, you know, unbelievable. But yeah, I think with Susan's character, this is where she's played it with Michael. He thinks he's saving her. He's got about a conjure. He just wants out of Red Rock West, doesn't he? But then it turns then, doesn't it? Like you say, we've got this whole train scene where She's running. She's got the money. She doesn't want to hand it over. He's sort of like, give it me, give it me. And she's like, no. And then eventually she has to trust him and she throws it and he brings her up. But then the gun's there in the middle of the carriage and she's looking at it and we keep flicking to it and you're thinking, no. And she goes full on Bonnie and Clyde, don't she? She's going to shoot him, but there's no bullets in it, Dave, because of the little Dennis Hopper thing from earlier, the little switcheroo. But then she does the psychopathic killer to, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so, hang on, you've just fired three fucking bullets if they've been in him. And I love the fact, Dave, it's very interesting. He gets the money, throws it over the side, and you're like, well, what a bell end. I would have just kicked her off the thing, but then throws her, which you don't usually see in movies. And no. I mean, it is a bit of a soft fall, Dave. She's on a moving fucking train, but for some reason, it's going about 3 miles an hour. And she just goes, oh, you bastard. And then the police come. But I think it sets the ending so good because Michael can get out of Red Rock West and no one knows he's even been there. He's just like, see ya. And she gets arrested. So I think the way it unravels, the double cross, the little flick with the gun cartridge from Lyle and everything, it all pays off, but not in a shit way where you're like, oh, that's like we've said loads of times, haven't we? Well, there's the fucking plot device straight away, you know, later on or whatever. It makes sense for the movie because it moves pretty quick. And I think that the ending's really good. I think it's quite a satisfying ending, to be honest.
Still fucking skint, though, isn't he? He gets away out of Red Rock.
Yeah, he's got no car now either.
Throw her off and then keep the money, like you say. But
I
have to say, you're right, Chris. I mean, throwing a woman off a moving train, yeah, you probably wouldn't see that these days.
I don't think so.
Everyone's in the cinema like, yeah, you fucking throw her off the train. It's like, ooh, I'm not sure that ages that well. But yeah, no, I guess within the context of this kind of movie, you know, you're supposed to really detest the femme fatale, aren't you? You know, and so I guess it kind of works, but it did make me laugh that, yeah, you probably wouldn't see that now. But yeah, no, really good, Chris. I mean, anything else, or should we get into our final review?
No, let's go into the review, Dave. So, Dave, yeah, I'm so pleased that, you know, for once I didn't stitch you up. Can you please bear that in mind? Because I know it's your opinion. Don't do this to me. But I really enjoyed this movie. Like I say, it's been over 20-odd years at least since I've watched it. It was one that I always, like, recommend for people. If you like Nicolas Cage, I know there's not a lot out there. He's a bit wacky and he's done some cracky movies recently, but it's not one that anybody remembers. If you say to people our age, it's usually Con Air, like you say. The one you said earlier, that was one of his first ones, wasn't it? Oh, The Rock, yeah, that's a brilliant film.
Oh, and Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona is the first one I remember. And that, like you say, The Rock, Con Air, they're all great movies. But this one is just before he sort of became mainstream towards like the mid-90s. He seemed to get quite his career elevated at that point. I do think the high point's Ghost thingy, Dave, Ghost Rider, which is amazing, which I did get sent on the Comics in Motion, both copies, which was amazing. So thank you for that. But no, I really enjoyed it. And it delivered, even though it's like 30-odd years old, it's still a great, great movie. So I'm going to send it, Dave, if not least for a while, to Cloud City, because I will watch this again. Oh, wow. I really, really enjoyed it. Not my sort of movie, but it just did everything that I remember and why I enjoyed it. It was just one of them Chris Phelps hidden gems. There's no reasoning why I should like this movie so much, Dave, because it's not in my wheelhouse normally, but I just really, really enjoyed it again. So yeah, cracking movie. What about yourself?
No, I have to say, Chris, bit of a gem. I mean, you've tried to find a bit of a gem in the past and things like Gladiator. Yeah. And not the Russell Crowe one. But this one, I have to say, is a bit of a gem. Now, it's not that easy to get hold of, is it? So Vinegar Syndrome had a re-release of it. I thought, it's Vinegar Syndrome. Of course, that we were exposed to with New York Ninja. So the same production company that brought us New York Ninja did a re-release of this. So yeah, honestly, I don't know why this doesn't get more accolades. I mean, it is quite a niche genre, isn't it? This kind of Western neo-noir crime thriller. But, you know, I think considering some of the other movies like by the Coen brothers and stuff, I mentioned about Blood Simple, but, you know, other, I guess Fargo isn't a Western, but I just think that I'm expecting more accolades for this. So, you know, when you pointed it out, I thought, yeah, this looks interesting, but, you know, it's probably not going to be great. But I do think this one really is good. So if you haven't watched it and you've made it this far, I would try and seek it out. I have to say, for some reason, like when we watched Blood Simple, I was kind of obsessed with it and, you know, ended up buying it, watched it a few times. With this one, it didn't quite grab me as much, but it did give me that same kind of feeling that, oh, you know what? If I watch this a bunch of other times, I'm sure I'll notice like small little things that are there, you know, just little subtle things that the directors put in, you know, to give you clues as to what's going to come later. So, yeah, really, really good. But it's just below a Cloud City for me. So I'm going to put it in Pleasantville, but a genuine gem that you've picked here.
It's not very often you've said that, Dave. Not very often. I think
that might be the first time.
Fucking hell. Unbelievable. Now, I alluded to it, Dave. It's your pick. What are you going to go with next week? Because I don't know what we're doing next week. I'm looking forward to this.
Now, Chris, I have had some side conversations with various people and talk about, you know, oh, I'm thinking about this movie. Like a few people have reached out about the Goonies, you know, wanted us to stay away from that. Because I think Chris might destroy it. But, this next movie is one of those that I know a couple of people have definitely been thinking about, and I'm going to try and recreate this lightning in a bottle here, where we're picking something that we know the other person hasn't watched, but it's a bit of a gem. Now, this is more of a roll of the dice, because I think I've only seen this one either once or twice. I can't remember. It was from 1997, so it was prime time when I was getting all those Blockbuster rentals for free. So, you know, and in my memory, there is... In fact, I'm going to stop myself from saying any more about it before I give the fucking the thing away. Or dare I say, Chris, giving the game away. So... this is going to be the 1997 movie starring the producer of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Michael Douglas, Chris. And it is called The Game.
I've never heard of this one, Dave.
Oh, well, there you go. It's the old... you batted one over to me and I'm batting one back.
Man has everything. Everything. Everything.
Happy birthday, yeah. Sir. Thank you, Maggie.
I don't like her. So what brings you to town, Conrad? Everything all right?
October 12th. Nikki's birthday.
This is for you. Consumer Recreation Services.
Call that number.
Why?
They make your life fun.
What are you selling?
It's a game.
A game?
Specifically tailored for each participant.
There's a little story. John, chapter 9, verse 25. Whereas once I was blind, now I can see. Now I can see.
One day your game begins. You either love it or hate it.
Are you going to spend the rest of the evening prying at that clown's mouth?
Mr. Van Orton, is everything all right?
Ah, Mr. Van Orton.
Have we met?
I believe so.
Why are you following me? Find out about a company called Consumer Recreation Services.
They won't stop, Nick.
He's in on it.
I paid the bill. I paid him more to make it stop.
I need the police. I'm gonna break into my house. I'm being poisoned by a bunch of depraved children.
They're trying to kill me.
Who's behind this? Who did this to me? Why?
This is all the game.
Right now, I am extremely dangerous.
You're behind the whole thing, aren't you? No!
What the hell's going to be this one? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They make your life fun.
It's okay. It's okay.
It's okay. is another thriller there. So I don't know. I remember watching it at the time, and I was impressed with it. That's all I'll say. And I just thought, you know, at some point I'll have to introduce you to this one. But yeah, bit of a thriller. So I'm gonna be intrigued. You know, when we record next week, what you think about it?
Honestly, I've never even heard of that one, Dave. So I got you with Red Rock West. You've done me with that one. Anything about that? That's going to be interesting review. I do like Michael Douglas, though. I mean, it's a bit of a cross between Gordon Gekko. Is it Nick out of one of my favourites? Dave, Basic Instinct, classic. You know,
got to throw him in the mix. Did you see as well? Someone posted on the Discord that they're going to remake War of the Roses.
Yeah, I don't understand how they do that. Obviously, it's not going to be Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, is it? But
no, I think it's Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman.
Oh, Olivia Colman, yeah. She's played like the Queen, hasn't she, in The Crown and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it seems bonkers to me. Like, just get some fucking new ideas, Hollywood. Like, and this, I thought this was an incredibly niche movie when we covered it. But yeah, sort of, as Spider-Man would say, you know, somehow got into the zeitgeist there.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm. Right, well, thank you, everybody, for today. And Dave, I'm pleased that you like that one. I really do. And I'm looking forward to next week, actually, because it's never heard it, seen it. So that'd be good. If you want to email us, the VHSStrikesBack@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, at VHSStrikesBack. Please drop us a review if you get a chance, guys, in your podcast catching app. And we'll read them out. Good or bad, we always say, but we will do that. If you do want to support us, please get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. And a massive thank you to everyone who supports the podcast, past and present. We do really appreciate it. So the roll call of honor for today, and a big thank you to Mr. Mike Burton, Lee, Helen, Dylan, Stephen, Trent, Dan, Justin, Susan, Timothy, Matt, Heath, Kent, Lucky Lulu Green, Herb, Jax, Math, Blake, John Hammond, and Mr. Tony Farina. So thank you so much for all your support, guys. Amazing, amazing stuff. Now, Dave, I'm not going to stitch you up. I think it's very appropriate. I picked this movie. I'm just going to say the last line that Nicolas Cage said in the movie, and I'm going to do it in his voice, Dave, which will sound nothing like him. It'll probably sound more like Elvis or something, but he just simply says, adios. That was Mexican, actually, Dave, so I don't know where he was going. Maybe the train was sent to Mexico. He got an accent on his way. I just say an American generic accent. Yeah. Adios. Adios, Red Rock.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now?
What are we gonna do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ah! Ah! Get to the chopper!
One ring to go.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad, ain't so bad. Come on, ain't so bad.
Yeah, enough. Come on,
you must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
Crazy.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.